There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Another episode of That's What People Do. You are joined by me, Ryan McGowan, and as always, James K. How are you doing, buddy? You all right?
I'm very well, thank you, Ryan, on this lovely March day. How are you doing?
It is March. Yes, I'm good. I'm all right. I'm doing good. It's been a while, hasn't it? It's been a little while since we last put out an episode. Who did we talk about last week? Last week.
Yeah. Was it Issei Sagawa? Fuck me, that was a long time ago. I think that might be pushing January, who knows?
No, it was Issei Sagawa on the 9th of Feb, so it's a happy month episode.
I wonder what everyone been up to in the previous month.
Yeah, how you all been getting on? Sorry, I have to straight off the bat. And the thing is, I feel like we offer so many of these apologies, so they're probably not worth much anymore.
Every episode now, it's just a sorry. We start with a sorry.
Yeah. Listen, you know, things are just, you know, they get in the way. Things get busy and this takes a long time. So bear with us. However, I will say, you know, things such as having ads on the show, obviously it lightens the load for us in terms of helping grow the show, us, you know, grow the coffers so that we can start doing some more things. So it's one of those, we're in those periods now where things have kind of like hunkered down until we start to like build up some funds to start doing some more bits. So I'm hoping, you know, real soon, maybe the second half of the year or something, we can start putting stuff together. So yeah, it's a weird thing. It's almost like, you know, new manager transition at a football club where you're kind of like, oh, things are just going a bit shit until you find the right manager to come in. But yeah, bear with us.
I will say though is in the meantime, get yourself over to TikTok because I'm having a fucking great time over there.
Yeah,
like I'm doing like two videos a day based on fucking whatever you want. I'm not gonna lie, I just, my life wasn't going, it's not a therapy session, James. I just got a bit bored with everything, you know, 9 to 5, just all consuming, you kind of lose meaning. So I started doing That's What People Do on TikTok, and I'm really happy with how it's going. It's also YouTube and Instagram, I upload there occasionally. But it's all on TikTok. That's What People Do on TikTok. Come and follow me, have a chat.
Follow us on TikTok, and anyway, it's our show. If you want it to be a therapy session, you can fucking do that, it's fine.
I always worry though about new listeners being like coming in and being like, why is he just like spending the first 10 minutes moaning about his life?
Do you know what, actually, we've had a couple of comments because we see reviews come through for us every now and then. There's a thing we use, it sends us every week, and people review every now and then, and a couple of the reviews have been, oh, I love the show, I love the content, but you know, you guys just, you know, you talk too much at the beginning. You know, all right, fine. Okay.
Well, if you are one of those people, we're talking right now. But I was actually having a conversation recently about podcasts, about people talking, and we came to the conclusion that if you wanted the information, you just go and Google it. You follow a podcast for the personalities and the people. So if you've stuck around, that means you like us. That's embarrassing for you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like that. Well, yeah, you asked me how I am. I'm doing all right.
Good.
Work is busy. It's weird. I work for a local government, so we've got elections coming up soon. So it's all pretty hectic at the moment. So, but yeah, all good. Right, I think we should just get straight down into it because I think we've got a really interesting episode here. Well, I should hope so. I fucking wrote it. I thought it'd be interesting. I think we've got a really good, interesting episode here with quite a interesting moral conundrum at the end. So are you ready to get into it?
I am. Hit me with your podcast stick.
Hit me. Right. Have you ever hated someone so much that you wish they'd just drop dead? Now, listen, you don't have to name
names. Oh, you pause.
Names.
It's not rhetorical. no, I don't think I have. I haven't liked people, but I don't think I've ever wished death on them. Apart from people, in fact, I've just lied to you. People that I play games against online that I don't know or have never met and they beat me, they can die. But never in real life.
In game. Yes, in game.
In game, yeah, in game.
Now, like I say, you don't have to name names for anyone listening. If you sort of was driving in your car and you just went, Cassandra, and like, no, you don't have to do that.
But, that means you need therapy.
Yeah. But I think, you know, most of us have probably at some point or other in our lifetime have wished someone dead. But the main thing is that we never really act upon it, right? So when we wish someone dead, we never really want them dead. We just want them gone from our lives in the most literal sense. And there really is no better way of distancing yourself from someone than them being dead. So it's just, I think, a case of just wanting to be away from them. But what happens...
Unless you're one of those people that can speak to dead people, in which case there is no escape. Derek Okora.
James, you'll love this. So we started watching The Traitors, Australia.
Oh, yeah, I love it. So good.
Absolutely love it. And I'm telling you now, if you've never watched it, go and watch it. It's one of the best things out there.
It's the medium woman. Yeah, woman, I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah,
Chloe,
yeah.
It's bear in mind this. I'm sorry, everyone, tangential. Right, I'm sorry. Bear in mind, your job is to discover who the traitors are, right? And you do this by probing questions, sort of maybe see how they're sort of vibing with other people, all this kind of stuff. Now, there is a psychic, a medium, a clairvoyant on the show who brags about the fact that she will be able to spot them straight away. She can see their auras. She's got psychic guides that will tell her. And then before she leaves, she just calls out, goes, that person, they're traitors, and then just leaves the competition. They're not traitors. It's fucking great.
Yeah, they just completely missed the mark.
Anyway, what happens when you really do want someone dead? Someone who is so despicable, so nasty, so evil, that it would be better if they were dead. Does someone ever deserve to die? Is vigilante justice ever justifiable? So let's look at the life of Ken Rex McElroy, or rather, the death of Ken Rex McElroy. It's the 10th of July, 1981. It's mid-morning, and Ken McElroy is slumped over the steering wheel of his pickup truck, blood pouring from his head. The engine of his truck gets louder as his foot is planted on the gas pedal until eventually it blows. All that can be heard now is the screams of his wife in the passenger seat, shattered glass in her hair. Outside the pickup truck is between 50 to 60 people in the street just watching, not saying a word, before they slowly file away into the alleyways and their trucks and drive off. So, who is Ken McElroy? And why was he murdered in such a public fashion? Now, born in July the 10th, 1934, Ken Rex McElroy was one of 16 children born to Tony and Mabel McElroy in Kansas, USA. They were a poor family, having a rough time during the Depression, but during the 1940s, they had a run of luck and were able to buy a farm in a small city called Skidmore in Missouri. I can only imagine that the Second World War kind of helped with that. They were like, oh, has this guy died and now doesn't own the farm? Great, I'll take it. Now,
that's
also
a really good point. I wonder how much property freed up.
This is the thing. I only thought about that when doing this episode. I was thinking that it was...
Yeah, there must have been loads of it.
Yeah, there must have been just people that just died and they had
especially
no family.
Especially if you were French or something, because then the civilians got wiped out as well.
Yeah, good point.
So, oh my God, so house prices must have absolutely dropped.
Yeah, war's probably...
You just move in, wouldn't you? This is mine now.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, well, apart from the ones that are still standing, you'd be livid, wouldn't you, if you survived but your house got blown up?
Yeah.
Anyway, another tangent, something to think about.
Yeah. Also, just out there, calling Skidmore a city is a stretch, right? So this There's never ever been any more than 600 people living in this quote city, right? At the last census in 2020, there were 245 people living there, right?
And but what constitutes a city in America?
I don't know. In the UK, you have to have a cathedral, as far as I'm aware. It has to be
apart from, I think there's a couple of outliers to that.
Yes, there are.
Or they got rid of, I don't know.
There's one down south that doesn't have it, and it's got like 1,000 people in it, and it's a city. And it, apparently, the reason why is back in like the year 2000 or something, they were like, oh, to mark a new millennium, loads of places could apply to be cities. And then the Queen, just with a big rubber stamp, just went bang, 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 bang. Yeah, fine, whatever. You could be a city. So that's why, apparently, why there's loads of cities that are like really
makes
tiny.
No difference. It was the MP. It was the Conservative MP that got murdered, wasn't it?
Oh,
they made his where yeah. he was. The MP
End.
For a city. I forget
South
where it
End,
was.
Just up the yeah, road from was me. It? Sir David Amis. I met him.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I met Sir David yep. Amis, I think 3 or 4 years before he died. And I was like, oh, it's just another Conservative MP. He was very big on like making Southend a city and it'd be good for business. And I was like, yeah, but not good for homeowners or people that want to buy a house because, you know, your house prices are going to rocket now because it's officially a city. Anyway.
It's also very commutable to London. I've been to Southend a couple of times.
And
one thing that did impress me is they at night time they have, yeah, it's not very nice, but they have urinals just in the middle of the road for people to piss in, which I thought was fantastic.
It's called the road. at the point of when Ken was born, right, there were only 498 people, so just shy of 500 people in your town. Those are the kind of towns where you just know everyone that lives there. Do you know what I mean? Now, I couldn't find too much on Ken's early life, but with 15 other siblings who were getting older and then starting
fucking Nelly's mom's banging them out.
Yeah, there was nothing else to do. After the war, you know, start to enjoy yourself. But yeah, when you've got 15 other siblings who are getting older, they're starting to bring their families back to the farmhouse too, you can imagine that, you know, it was pretty tricky to stay relevant in such a large family. In fact, I've actually heard stories of younger children, like the runt of the litter, who literally have to fight their siblings to just make sure they eat at dinner. Because, like, you know, when you've got 15 kids, you're not serving up each plate. You're just putting a big bowl on the table and you're going, right, have at it. And you feed yourself. And so, like, it gets to a point, you know, all the big kids, you know, they're shoving their face full of it. And then you get the little ones at the bottom.
Pecking order.
Can't eat nothing. Really weird. Now, for Ken, he was likely made to work on the farm and just generally left to his own devices, as the young ones would be. Now, his parents weren't too full-on in their parenting. They weren't abusive at all. They were maybe a little bit distant, but, you know, you've got 15 kids. I can't be fucking parenting all of you. His dad, Tony, was known to shout at the kids quite a lot to just tell them off, but I think that wears off eventually when you're a kid and you realise, oh, he's not going to do much. He's just going to shout at you. It's fine. Just run away. Now, by the time that Ken is in his teens, his dad kind of just gave up the parenting thing and just let him loose. You know, you fuck off, do your own thing. And to be honest, I kind of get this, right? Because, listen, a 15-year-old today is not a 15-year-old in 1949. You know what I mean? Like, they'll likely have had years of experience working some kind of job, be it either a proper job that's paid or working in the house for the family. And at the risk of sounding like an old man shouting at the clouds, but kids today are very much just kids until they're like mid-20s, you know what I mean?
Sometimes I still struggle with, like, I'll sit here and be like, oh, I'm an adult. I had this moment, this is a massive aside, I was in the shop the other day and I was walking around buying all my stuff for dinner and like the shop for the week, having my list. And then it suddenly struck me that like I'm an adult with money. So I just went and bought loads of chocolate milk. And that was just a really freeing experience for me. So I was like, as a kid, this is what I dreamed of. Like, why have I never done this before? So I just went and did it. And it was really nice for me.
I literally had it earlier when I was walking home from work. I popped by the shop to get some bits for dinner, like yourself. And I walked past their aisle where they've got the games and the TVs and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And as I walked past it, I saw a keyboard that was RGB, all like red, green, blue and all that. And I was like, oh, that looks nice. I could buy it. No, I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to buy it. Because I can. And I'm going to. I suppose that's what girlfriend is.
That's literally what, having a partner is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like having another parent. Stop doing that. All right, fine. Anyway. Now, I have seen apparently that school was quite tricky for Ken. He was bullied quite a lot. especially when the other kids around him found out that he couldn't read. Now, that to me says this is a bad school. That changed when Ken had a growth spurt and he and his brother decided that walking around school with a pocket knife in your hand threatening any of the bullies and other kids who thought they might take the piss was a good idea. That would work. Mm. That would work.
It would also get you expelled very quickly these days.
Yeah, it would. Now, at this point, you know, Ken is starting to grow in confidence, right? And it's one of those, you know, got knife in hand, no one can touch me kind of vibe. He's starting to believe that he can be a strong person now, right? And he doesn't need to be told what to do by nobody. His dad doesn't tell him what to do. Like, no one should be able to tell him what to do. Now, when he's 14, he and a friend would spend quite a lot of their time riding their horse across the countryside, you know, playing in fields, probably kissing, I don't know. And if they came across a fence, you know, they'd just hop over it, that kind of vibe.
Uh-huh.
Now, when they wandered into a farmer's field, they were told to, you know, get off the property, you know, and I bet it was, you know, it's probably like the old school, you know, get off my property kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, Ken apparently simply told the farmer to fuck off and then he just left him to it. So he was quite intimidating even as a young adult.
No.
Yeah.
I thought every farmer has a gun. I thought that was, as a kid, I don't know if you were the same, but like we were before the time of technology. That makes it sound so old, but yeah. we had technology, but we used to go out with our friends. And were you always like convinced that if you ever you were on like a field that someone else owns, they legally can shoot you? That was always the rumor, that they can legally shoot you. Yeah. And we were always so scared.
They legally can't shoot you. Yeah, that's right. They can, I suppose, tell you to get off their property because it's theirs. But I swear this is a thing. I must have been 14. And I was in a farmer's field. So where I went to school, there was quite a lot of farms around the area in my part of Essex. Mm-hmm. And I was in one of these fields playing football. And we swear blind, we heard a warning shot from the farmer's house up the road. Like, because you could see the house just in the distance. But we swore blind. We're like, oh, was that a shot? That was a shot. We legged it. So whether it was or not, it did the trick. You know, we got out the guy's
field.
It might
have been like just people shooting some pheasants or a car backfiring. We used to every year go on a camping trip, we'd camp in a farmer's field around by us, and we'd spend all night convinced that he's going to come and shoot us all. I don't know why we did it. Every year we'd go and spend a night being scared to death in this guy's field. never saw him once.
No. Do you know what the irony is? He probably did know you were there. He's just stood at his kitchen window going, them fucking kids are back, and his wife's being like, oh, just let him be kids, it's fine.
Yeah, massive land. We had to move the cows, but yeah, we never got shot. They can't shoot. American listeners right now are going like, well, they can shoot you. In the England, they cannot shoot you.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to.
Yeah, there is this myth as well that in the UK you can't have guns. Like, guns are illegal. It's not. It's not at all. It's just we have, you know...
No, you should have a license.
Gun restrictions and licenses and shit.
You can have, like, rifles, like hunting rifles. You can't, like... He's not going to come at you with a fucking assault rifle. Yeah. It's just not... That'll never happen.
Imagine.
But, like, a rifle that takes, like... years to reload one of them.
It's one of those that it's not often we'll cite Piers Morgan, right? But when there was that Las Vegas shooting, do you remember it? There was Piers Morgan having a battle with some American gun rights activist at the time, and he was saying like, what I can understand, you kind of need guns, like we have guns in the UK, you buy, you know, hunting rifles and shotguns for like farmers and stuff like that, but you know, why can't you just have those? And they were like, oh no, we have a right to have an AR-15. He was like, I'm sorry, it's called an assault rifle, it's what the fucking military uses. Do you know what I mean? What are you
if
assaulting?
A fox comes on your land, are you gonna fucking mow them down with this assault rifle? Like, you're just gonna create more damage.
Yeah.
And you're not going hunting with it, are you? Because then you're fucking, the things you've hunted and want to eat is just gonna be full of bullets. You just want one shot. It's ridiculous. It makes no sense.
Let's get off gun control because it's not what we're on about. Although, to be fair, this episode, honestly, as we go, the story needs gun control. Now, some things are inevitable in life, okay? A stop clock is right twice a day. The sun rises in the east, it sets in the west. And teenagers, if they've got fuck all to do, they will be stupid and do stupid shit. Now, Ken was no different. He found an old clapped out car that he wanted to do up. Now, the problem was he didn't have a job to pay for the parts he needed to fix it up. So instead, he decided he would just steal whatever he needed, you know, instead of actually getting a job. He would steal parts from tractors in the fields, which must have pissed off the farmers. He'd siphon petrol from people's cars, which would have pissed off those that owned the cars. And when the truck was up and running, he upped the game and started stealing livestock. Now, he would just drive to local farms looking for easy-to-grab livestock like sheep, and then wearing all black in the dead of night, he'd just grab the animal, hoist it into the back of the truck, where he'd then take it to an accomplice at another farm who would then sell it at an open market, and then the money would be split between the lot of them. Which, you know, it's a good little gig, but just really, go get a job. He really doesn't want to get a job.
Yeah.
Now, he would go on to run a gang of teenagers just running around town, stealing farm equipment, stealing grains, livestock, even breaking into people's homes, which, if I'm honest, really wasn't that hard back then, because this is definitely one of those places where no one locks their front door, let alone shut it.
Places like that freak me out. Oh, the postman just opens our front door and leaves the post. What?
Can you imagine?
What do you mean opens the front door?
Yeah, you're just in the kitchen.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Like, hello, just your post is on the side. Like, what? Who? What?
I would shit myself every day. I'm one of these people that's paranoid that my front door's not locked. Every time I go past it, I'll check it.
Yeah.
It has to be locked.
Yeah.
But I'm from Birmingham, so it makes a lot of sense. It's wild.
You live in those no-go zones.
Yeah, that apparently exist, even though I go there.
Yeah. Anyway. Basically, he's a little shit, right? In fact, no, I'll change that. He's a straight-up criminal, and he's not a little shit. He's not a teenager now. This guy's an adult. He's a young adult. He's like 18, right? And he's getting 14-year-olds to, like, steal for him like a shit Fagin. Now,
he's literally a Fagin.
Yeah, he is a proper menace. Everyone knew he was a thief. He was reported to the police on many occasions, but they just couldn't pin anything on him, despite the fact that even police knew he was the guy behind the roaming band of child thieves. They just couldn't prove it. And whenever he was confronted, he would simply reply with, quote, "If you think you've got a case against me, prove it." That's
it's one of them.
Yeah, that's annoying. If you were the cop and you're like, oh, shut the fuck, I get it. You know those guys that go, I know my rights. You're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. People that turn into lawyers the second police get involved.
Oh, God.
Don't get me wrong, police can be dickheads and be wrong.
Yeah.
But the easiest way to fight the police is just agree with them, go with them, and then have your day in court, and then take him to the cleaners with a good lawyer. You can't do it on the side of the road.
I tell you the people that I find infuriating, just as an observer, is those sovereign citizens. Have you seen them videos of sovereign citizens?
Well, they come and get involved.
No. So a sovereign citizen is like someone who doesn't believe that they live within the limits of the law of the land that they're living in because they're a sovereign citizen. I don't recognise your law, therefore I don't have to abide by it. And that means stuff like, do you have a... So you'll see videos of people and they've been pulled over by the police and like, oh, have you got your licence and registration? And they're like, driver's licence. And they're like, no. And like, why not? I don't have it. I don't need to have my driving license on you. And they're like, you're driving a car. You need to have a driver's license. And they're like, no, I'm a sovereign citizen. I don't follow your rules and all this kind of stuff. And it's fucking infuriating. I'm telling you, it's one of the most annoying things.
Hmm.
So we all know that he's a professional criminal. So let's now talk about the softer side of Ken, the romantic side. Now, he was the very definition of tall, dark, and handsome. He was a relatively good-looking young man with almost jet black hair and piercing blue eyes. He was easy on the eye for some women and charming in his own way. And when I mean in his own way, I fucking mean it, right? Because his type is not strictly legal.
Ah.
Yeah. Aged 18, Ken married for the first time to a woman named Oletta. Now, she's a little younger than him at the age of 16, and that's not too bad if you're 18, 16 at that time.
I don't think that's illegal either.
It's, I don't know, because, yeah, Ken's under 21.
Well, the age of consent in the UK is 16.
Well, I think
you said he was 18. But either way, the age of consent is 16, so, like, I'm not backing it. I'm not saying it's right, but legally, you can do it.
In the UK, in the UK, it's legal, yes. They moved in together, but married life really wasn't working for Ken. Now, whilst he tried to get a job, it wasn't happening. He immediately resorted back to his criminal ways. He was thieving, drinking, fighting, and trying to find his way into the pants of any other girl. But not just any girl. Now, I mentioned he has a type. And as Ken would go on to say when talking to a woman at a bar, quote, "You're too old for me. I like my women young and tender. I like that young meat." Now,
fucking, did he meet Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah. I'd say we can all guess what
someone
he means.
Someone needs to put a stop to that, man.
Yeah, for sure.
It's getting weird. It's a problem.
It's getting weird.
It's Epstein levels.
Oh, that's a claim. That's a hot take.
I'm sure, isn't that... I don't know if it's an Epstein quote. It's probably a... Probably. No, he said that Bill Clinton said it. That's what he said in those files that got released.
What?
That was a wild night, that was, when the Epstein files got released. Bill Clinton didn't come out of it, but there's a quote of Jeffrey Epstein saying Bill Clinton likes his women young. That was the quote. And nothing came of it. All these files got released and nothing came of it. We should really look into that.
Yeah, it's like as the Panama as Papers, a people. Remember those?
Yeah. Just take these bastards down.
Yeah. So, we can all guess what he means by when he says he likes that young meat, but we don't have to because we're going to get into it. Now, his marriage to Aletta didn't work out, and at 24 years old, he was able to... pursue the type of girl he really wanted. There was the 17-year-old Barbara. That's now getting a bit weird when you're 24.
It's wrong.
The 15-year-old Sharon.
Now we're getting into illegal. Okay, naughty.
And the 13-year-old Donna.
Oh, bro. It's like Romeo and Juliet, isn't it? She was 13, he was 19, and yet people think it's a love story. Yeah. It's grooming.
It's grooming, yeah. If we haven't already guessed, Ken Rex McElroy is a nonce. Now, we will meet more of Ken's girls as we go on, but for now, let's focus on...
Can I flag that word? Sorry, I really want to flag that because we have Australian listeners. Nonce in Australia means like someone who's a bit silly. Nonce in the UK means paedophile.
Really?
Because I used to work with a girl. Yeah, I worked with Phoebe, who grew up in Brisbane, and she came over here and started calling everyone a nonce, thinking it just meant, oh, you're such a nonce, you're so like silly. And we had to step in and be like, no, it's... That means paedophile over here. So just for any Australian listeners, that's what we're going on about. Please
that
continue.
That is so funny. Did you know, actually, that NONCE is an acronym?
Is it?
It is. And it stands for... it's a prison term, basically. And it basically means for prison people, it's a sex offender. And NONCE means not on normal circulation environment or something like that. It basically means this,
right? Because they kept them separate.
Yeah, so they'd be kept separate from general population. So it was always a sex offender that they then everyone knew. Oh, you know, you keep the nonces away from. So it was originally seen as an actual normal, like, acronym phrase
That's
to describe a person. But now we use it as a derogatory thing.
Of course, you don't want to be a nonce.
No, you don't want to be a nonce. No. So let's get into it. Let's meet this Sharon that we were talking about, right? So one night, 15-year-old Sharon, right? They're arguing inside Ken's truck. So Ken would, like, pick her up from school, that kind of vibe. And they were arguing it out. And at one point, Ken pulled out a shotgun on this child, threatening her. Unfortunately, the shotgun went off by accident and ripped out a portion of Sharon's chin. Now, luckily, she survived. Her parents tried to press charges on Ken for assault with a deadly weapon, but weirdly, he got off completely scot-free. And my question is, how? Well, it seems that her parents dropped all charges, and we don't entirely know why, but it is heavily implied that some playful threats were sent the family's way. In fact, not only did he not serve any time for almost murdering a child, Sharon would become the second Mrs. McElroy, which is fucking nuts. He married this girl that he shot her chin off.
How does she forgive him for that? And two, did he do it out of, like, remorse? Like, oh, fuck. Best marry her now. No one else is going to. She's got no chin.
No, I don't think he was doing a good deed. I don't think he was being altruistic or anything like that. I think the dude is a scumbag who knew that she was terrified of him, and so he abused her. Now, if we're not already in the this guy's a prick camp, this will definitely put you there. Age 26, Ken had his eye on 14-year-old Sally. Now, her older brother was a hunting friend of Ken's, and once he decided he liked the look of this particular child, he would wait outside her school ready to pick her up in his truck. Then he would take her out to get whatever she wanted. I assume maybe candy bars and the latest girls magazine of an article on push-up bras. Now, one night, she was found on the roadside, bloody and bruised and a little shook. Allegedly, Ken had pressed her for sex. When she said that she wasn't comfortable with that, he threatened to kill her dad unless she relented.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah, I can only assume that he then beat her for just not doing what he wanted in the first place and then still got his end away. It's grim.
He sounds like one of them people. You know, you meet like men, I'm going to say men in this instance, where like they're just big. They know they're big. They've got no fucking brain power and they just remind you of a caveman. Like, you just imagine them going like, club, club, where all they know is the basic instincts of like steal, a lot of stealing is a basic instinct, like eating, having sex and sleeping. Like, that's all they know. He sounds like one of them. I've known a few of them in my time.
Yeah, no, you're right. It does sound very similar to that kind of person. There's not a lot going on upstairs. It's very basic, animalistic. But he wasn't done with her, right? He's not done with this 14-year-old. A few days later, he had her moved in to his house with him and the now 17-year-old Sharon, the woman who he shot the chin off. Not that Sharon was ever going to get a say in this arrangement, of course, right? He would just shoot off the rest of her chin if she didn't like it. So now he's got a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old that he has just sexually assaulted, now living in his house. And the parents are just fine with this? Now, Ken would play the two girls off one another. He would sleep with both of them regularly and, in fact, would quite regularly beat them in front of his friends when they were around the house, which...
Right.
Just a quick PSA, right? One, never hit your partner. That's outrageous. If you don't like it, leave. Fuck off. But also, no, more the point. If you have a friend who you know assaults or beats or anything like that, you're... their partner, like, fucking, they're not your friend, dob them in, they're the worst of the worst. Call it out. Yeah, anyway, not that I should, you know, I don't feel like I have to know our guys, but yeah, weird. How could you sit there, your mate is like beating his wife because she's like, I don't know, maybe the beers are not cold enough or something, and you're just like gonna sit there and be like, yeah, Ken, you tell her, like, what?
Yeah.
Now, when Sharon, the girl who he shot the chin off, when she was 19, she's finally plucked up the courage to leave Ken, taking her baby daughter with her. Now, this baby daughter was the second child that she had with Ken. Now, she called the authorities on him, detailing all the abusive behaviour, all the assaults that took place, and the child bride stuff. And the authorities were horrified, and a case was put against him. But, just like Teflon, it didn't stick. Ken discovered where Sharon was holed up and pleaded with her to come back to the home. When she said no, he told her that he would have her firstborn son brought back to the home. See, he had the child sent away to live with his sister, taken away from Sharon. Now, I don't know what the scenario was, but I have heard rumours that maybe the sister thought the child was not being looked after properly, so said, listen, why don't you just let me have the kid? I'll look after it, this, that, the other. Naturally, Sharon doesn't get a say in any of this stuff. So as far as she's concerned, her son has just been taken away from her and lives somewhere else. So he was like, look, come back to the house. I'll bring the boy back. Now, naturally, the prospect of being reunited with your child was too tempting, and Sharon came back to the house with Ken and Sally and dropped all charges.
Right.
Sharon would go on to have three more children with Ken. Now, Sally, remember the 14-year-old that he brought on that he sexually assaulted in his car, she would go on to have three of her own children with Ken by the time she turned 17.
Jesus Christ.
It's just, oh, it's grim. It's grim.
It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable.
It's really bad. Sally would eventually have her children taken away by social services. Sally would soon just walk out on Ken, like without her kids because they've been taken away. And she just kind of, you know, wouldn't be seen again. And all of Ken's parental rights were taken away from the kids as well. So he just wasn't allowed to sort of know anything. But he just didn't seem to care about it at all. He never made any point of searching out for his children. It's almost like he completely forgot they existed because they're just, they're not anything to him. He only cares about himself. Now, not content with now just one woman in his life with Sharon, the 32-year-old, was keen to find some more fresh meat. Now, with Sharon living with his mother in the family farm with all the kids, Ken struck up a new relationship with 18-year-old Alice. Now, she'd known him for 3 years at this point, which means she was 15 when she met him and he would have been 29, which is like double the age, right? So that's fucking weird.
That is grooming.
It's called grooming. Yes. In those 3 years, Alice had fallen in love with him. Which I don't see what she saw, right? Maybe in hindsight, you know.
There was all, right. We're going to go back to our school days. You know, like, there was always, I think every school had that one girl that was, like, more sexually active than everyone else and, like, admitted it to everyone. And it was always with a guy who was, like, creepily old. Like, she'd be like, oh, my boyfriend's coming to pick me up and he's, like 30 and she's, like, 15.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fucking. Do you know what's mad? It's actually that's part. That's in. Like, I've got that down. We will talk about that. We can come back to that in a second. But yeah, it's bizarre. You say it is grooming. But I don't understand how she looks at this dude who's clearly abusive to his other half, who already, like, we know has a wife. We know he's got like 8 kids already. That, you know, 3 or 4 of them just don't even live with him. At what point do you look at this person and go, yeah, you're a catch when you're 18? Come on, man.
Maybe it's like the whole I can change him sort of thing.
There is a lot of that in women, isn't there? Now, you can imagine the face on Alice when she found out that being in a relationship with Ken wasn't all a bed of roses. He would often be out of the house for days on end, just unable to get a hold of him. And she best be in the house when he randomly decides to come home or there will be hell to pay, which is a terrifying notion because you'll just never leave the house at that point.
It's like waiting for the boiler man to come when he's like, I'll come between 10 and 6.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not fucking helpful, is it?
Just like the boiler man. Now, Ken was still out trying to collect girls. He would beat Alice relentlessly till her face was virtually unrecognisable if she backchat or asked questions. Eventually, she just learnt to keep quiet, which is so fucking sad. Like, I know that I part joked about her falling for this man, but like, let's not forget, this guy's a predator. He deliberately dupes these women and young girls before showing his true colours. That, and we know that leaving an abusive relationship isn't easy. Like, in today's world, with all the help at our fingertips, it's still hard. So, can you imagine back then when, like, you know, you don't know what a phone number is for the latest helpline or anything like that? Like, you just, you can't get out. It's hard.
You are stuck. Yeah.
Which reminds me, do you remember that emergency alert that we get now? If the government decides, you know, oh, in fact, it was most recently heard, you know, in is it Portsmouth or Plymouth? In Plymouth, when that World War II bomb was found and everyone had to be evacuated from the town, there was a police officer who was giving an interview on the TV and the alert went off on his phone because the government were like, oh, there's a bomb in your area. Be careful. You need to leave and evacuate.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
And it happened. It was live. But when that happened, do you remember there was a test day? I think it must have been like a November time and they went, oh, remember everybody.
I think it was actually in summer because I think they had to pause Wimbledon for it. Or was it? Or was it snooker? It was some sort of like event where they had to pause a sporting event, a quiet sporting event.
Because they were saying to everyone, listen, don't be surprised. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, your phone's going to go off in an alarm. It's this. Don't worry about it. It's just a test. But they had to warn people, especially those in abusive relationships, in case they had hidden secret phones away from their abusive partners.
Hide them.
And they were like, look, you need to lose them.
I hope also heeded that message.
Yeah, I bet they did. But yeah, that's quite scary that you know, there are people in that, you know, there are people in this world that, you know, they had to hide that phone because of it. It's bizarre. Anyway, let's.
Isn't there a whole thing as well if you ring an emergency number and you ask to, like, for a pizza? Like, that's a code for you need help.
I don't
know. And then they'll talk you through it.
I know bars.
I'm sure that's a thing.
I know bars have a lot of secret
stuff. Oh, the angel shops.
Yeah, or if, like, you know, you go behind the bar and you ask for, like, a specific cab or something like that, they know that you're not.
But then I've worked at multiple bars and not once have I been taught any of these code words, so I'm not sure how real they actually are.
Maybe
if someone came up to me asking for an angel shot, I'd be like, that's not on the menu, you silly bitch. Like, what are you on about?
This girl's so drunk.
Security on her.
She's so drunk, she's making up her own fucking drinks. So anyway, yeah, let's count down Ken's girls, right? He's got Sharon living with his mum on a farm and all the kids. He's got Alice holed up at home, terrified of him coming home. In fact, Sharon would eventually leave and move to Florida, leaving Ken with just Alice. So at this point, it's time to find a new bride. Now, aged 37, I love repeating these. 37, a bingo hall. Now, aged 37, Ken was hanging out with a hunting buddy when he was made aware of the friend's stepdaughter. Trina was blonde and blue-eyed. She was petite, she was friendly, and could be quite funny. Oh, and she's 12.
I don't know if the silence will be left in the edit, but it's a stunned silence.
I'm probably going to leave the silence in. People will be like, has it just stopped? Ken is 37 years old, and he's now got looking at this blonde, blue-eyed 12-year-old, and he's like, that's a bit of me, you know. Now, Ken would deploy all of his tricks to woo this child. He would sit outside the school in his truck waiting for her to finish school. The school didn't like it. In fact, they confronted Ken on several occasions, but he just kept doing it. And this is where we get to what you were talking about, James, earlier, right? This shit used to happen at my school fairly regularly when I was a kid. You get that kid who was suspended from school who just hang out in front at the front gates on their bike.
Just fucking turn up. Like, what are you doing? You got nothing but also, what are your parents doing? If I got expelled, I'm like, I'm going out on my bike. They're like, no, you fucking not.
Yeah, but I suppose that there's a reason that they, you know, they can get out and why they were expelled. It's because their parents don't give a fuck. But we on several occasions had like this 20-year-old like guys just hanging outside the gates at lunchtime, where then all like the year nine girls, so they're what, like 13, they'd like go and hang out at the gate and spend their lunch break talking these 20 odd year olds. In fact, there was one girl who I think I may have told the story about her before. I'll name her. Her name is Tanya. I won't say her full name, but her name was Tanya, right? And she in year eight, it sounds really misogynistic, of course, but she was one of those girls that grew up quite a lot. She grew up
an early developer.
She was an early developer.
Yeah, that's fair.
So she grew a lot earlier than everyone else. And she in year eight, right? So you're like what, 13? She would brag about the fact that she's got like this boyfriend who's 24, and that this guy would just come to the school gates and just hang out with her. She's like 13.
It does make you wonder, like, how shit was safeguarding back then, because I've got like multiple friends now who are teachers and I speak to them regularly, and the stuff they have to go through safeguarding wise, like, kids can't even breathe without everyone knowing about it.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck were we doing back then? Were teachers listening to this and be like, oh, that's funny?
Yeah.
It's fucking awful.
If you are a teacher and you see this shit, like, how do you stop it? Do you like actually go out and confront them and tell them fuck off? Like, what?
No, you have to report it. I think there's specific means.
Why can't you just go out and go, hey, get the fuck out of my fucking school, go away.
You have to deal with it correctly. I don't know, as a teacher I wouldn't want to like it to fall on me either, but 100% I'd report it immediately and be like, we need to get this student safe because they are being groomed. But like, for the girls, I suppose it's exciting to be chatting to someone older, but then you get to the age, say he's like 24 and they're like 15, that 15-year-old will then get to 24 and then be disgusted with themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, 24-year-olds aren't that great. He was just a creep.
I can only imagine that, you know, the kind of girls that did go through that will now feel that as they're a lot older.
The only reason that the 24-year-old is having to go for the 15-year-old is because no one his age wants him, and that says a lot.
Yes. Now, we know that the school didn't like Ken hanging around for his 12-year-old girlfriend or victim. But what did Trina's parents think of it? Well, her mother shrugged it off, basically not thinking too much of it, right? When he'd just pick her up from school and all this kind of stuff, she was like, oh, look, it's just because Ken is a friend of the stepdad. She was just like, oh, he's just being a good neighbour and all this kind of stuff. So she fully just played it off, didn't believe at all that anything would be going on. But when, you know, Trina started doing things like skipping school to hang out with Ken, at this point, you know, the stepdad was like, no, hold on a minute, like, you're stopping the girl's education and shit, like, you know, sort your life out. He would try to keep Trina away from Ken, but he would just keep coming by her house to just, you know, hang out, or he'd just keep going by the school if he couldn't get to her for the house. So Trina's parents did what any other parent would do. They gave in and let Ken have his end away with their 12-year-old daughter.
As you do, you just give up on your child. That's the correct thing to do.
Yeah, shit parenting, man. What's even more fucked up when you learnt that they gave up, right, was that Ken would pick up Trina from the bus stop before school, right? Then he'd just drop her back off at some point in the afternoon and she would be coming back all ruffled and she'd clearly been crying.
Right.
And yet she would still wait for him the next morning and the parents just let it happen. Like, your girl comes back, her clothes are all ruffled, she's crying. And you just let her go out next morning.
So weird.
It's baffling. It's really baffling. Now, by the time Trina is 14, right, so she's been in this now 2 years, she was pregnant with Ken's baby. And she dropped out of school completely. She's now living with Ken as well. All the while, Alice, who he beats black and blue and she's not allowed to leave the house, she is in the house as well, right? But she's not quiet anymore. Alice would run away to live with her parents. Ken tracked her down and threatened to have her son taken away from her if she didn't come back with him. She refused and started keeping a gun at her side at all times, but this didn't faze Ken. He showed back at the family home and shot Alice's dad through the living room window, hitting the dad in the leg. Charges were placed against Ken, but while he was waiting his day in court, Ken would spend the next 10 months terrorizing Alice and her family. This guy is not sitting in a jail cell waiting for his trial. He's out on bail.
Yeah, still doing shit. Yeah. But then he's probably breached the rules of his bail, so they're not arrested him.
You'd think this guy would prank call the house at all times of the day, threatening to kill the stepdad if they didn't drop the charges. He would drive by the house randomly, sometimes just sitting out there, you know, doing nothing, just sitting there staring at the house. Yeah, he's fucking scary. And one night, the stepdad is in a tavern just enjoying a pint when Ken stormed in. Knife in hand, he threatened to kill him if he didn't drop the charges. When he felt that his message wasn't being understood, he then goes out to his truck, pulls out a 12-gauge shotgun, bars the doors to the tavern and essentially holds up the entire place, keeping everyone hostage. Now, with shotgun in hand, Ken held the barrel in the face of Alice's stepdad and said, "I'm going to kill you unless you swear not to testify. I'm going to start at your feet and shoot all the way up until there's nothing left of you."
Jesus.
And
that's a threat.
The entire tavern is sat, held hostage, watching.
Just witnesses.
Witnesses, every single one of them. Now, when the police showed up, Ken has gone. There's a hole in the ground where his shotgun had gone off, and a white-as-a-ghost stepdad is just stood at the bar. Now, surprisingly, nobody in the bar said they saw a thing.
Oh, fucking hell. I appreciate snitches get stitches, you don't say anything, but come on.
Yeah, come on. Now, the stepdad sang like a canary. And to his credit, the barman, who saw the whole thing, was like, "Okay, yeah, no, fine, it was out of line. I did see it. I will testify as well. So you've great. We've got a witness. We have a case now, which is really good. Finally, we're going to nail Ken for something because he's an arsehole."
Yeah.
Now, here we really see how much power that Ken has over the town, right? He's been running around for years, causing havoc, stealing from people and abusing little girls, and everyone is afraid of him. He doesn't give a fuck about anyone or anything. He lives for himself. In some way, he is like the evil version of Diogenes, right? He lives outside the law, doing whatever pleases him, except what pleases him is being a criminal and a paedophile. Diogenes just like taking a shit in public and wanking in his Var's house. Two like opposite scales, you know?
Yeah.
So Ken was arrested and released on bail for this.
Again.
When he finally went to trial, he hired a rather expensive lawyer from Kansas who I have to say is a damn good lawyer. That, or the justice system in Skidmore City, is as strong as wet spaghetti.
in court, Ken's lawyer managed to get the taking hostages of a whole tavern with a deadly weapon and threatening to kill a witness if he didn't drop the charges down to a rather simple misdemeanor of just, he just testing the witness. He's just threatening him a little bit. He didn't mean it. He got all of that down to a mere misdemeanor.
That's a good advert for the lawyer.
Oh, yeah, the best. Which is absolutely insane, right? There is still a charge, though, which is good, right? Ken could go down. So what's your bet that he does?
Oh, very slim.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think he did.
Yeah, he got off completely scot-free. How? Remember, we've got a key witness here, a barman, who saw everything and said he would testify. That barman, who is the only one who's open out here, on the stand, claims he saw nothing.
Why did he get threatened beforehand then?
Don't know. Completely changed his story. You can only assume that he got threatened.
Absolutely bottled it.
Absolutely bottled it. Totally shit scared. Yeah. And that was it. Can you imagine being the judge, being like, hold on a minute. So I've got a piece of paper.
We just wasted everyone's time.
Wait. So you're saying you didn't see anything? No. So I've got an A4 document here of a statement saying, is everything that happened? And you're saying that that's not true. Yes, Your Honor, that's not true. You lied. Yes, okay, fine. Like, it was more worth it doing that than just saying what actually happened against Ken.
Wow. He has absolutely no bottle. What a weak human being.
What a weak human being. There's another weak human being coming up, which is fucking wild. Now, the worst part is that Ken had got what he wanted, right? Alice, sick of the abuse her family was getting from him, had moved back into the farmhouse with Ken and was brought to court to be a character witness in Ken's defense.
What?
Yeah. So just let's set this, like, put all these puzzle pieces back, right, so we can see this nice, big, clear picture from afar. We are in court because Ken threatened her Alice's stepdad that he would kill her if he didn't drop the charges for shooting him originally, right? Alice has run away. Yep. The whole reason why this happens is because she ran away from the abuse. Now, he's abused the family to the point of this happening. Alice now drops the charges because she's sick of it and she just has to move back in with Ken. She's just given up. She's moved back in with him and he's now making her be his character witness, where she stands up on trial and says, oh, no, he's a fine gentleman. In fact, this is exactly what she says. On the stand, Alice says, quote, that Ken is a fine person and an outstanding citizen. This is the same girl that cannot leave the house because she's terrified of him coming home. And if she leaves the house when he comes back, she gets battered blue by him.
I'm not a psychologist, so I can't speak on this with any sort of conviction, but there does seem to be a not a trend, but women that are being abused in relationships, there are cases where they will defend the person abusing them until their last breath, which is or go back on, like, the story that comes to mind, whatever opinions have on it regardless, is the Mason Greenwood one, which, if you don't know, is the footballer, a Manchester United footballer who was voice recorded, like, verbally, like, abusing his girlfriend. Whether he was physical, I don't know. The video made it sound like the voice clip made it sound like he was. And then there was a whole thing that he got dropped from Man United. And then she drops all of the charges. I think she's pregnant with his baby now. And they're, like, living together in Spain. Even though everyone heard it, everyone heard how fucking awful he was to her. She's now with him.
Yeah.
Which is confusing, but I suppose you can't speak on it unless you're in their situation.
No, you can't. But it is a really interesting thing to look at from an outsider. And that's why everyone's so confused by it, because they're like, she's the person that brought up the charges of sexual assault. And she's then also the person that's dropped them. And she lives with him now in Spain while he plays football. And you wonder why.
It is bizarre. But then, like, I remember getting into a debate about this. I think the police can press charges if they think there's a case, whether she wants to or not.
Oh, right.
So they must have thought that there wasn't one.
I suppose, yeah. Yeah, if there's enough of a case, you go, no, this is undeniable. This is happening. Yeah, interesting. Now, surprisingly, Ken was found guilty of trying to bribe a witness and was sentenced to 6 months in prison.
Okay.
His lawyer, the very next day, appealed the decision and asked for a retrial. And for some unknown fucking reason, I genuinely don't know, I cannot find out why, the court just straight up closed the case instead and just didn't bother to run it again or uphold the original sentence. So Ken just walked after holding up a bar and threatening to kill a man. Never spent a day in jail.
Right. That's good, isn't it?
Yeah. Where's the logic? Make this make sense. Now, this stuff would make any citizen just give up on the legal system, right? It clearly doesn't work when a piece of work like Ken can just do what he likes and just suffer no consequences. For Ken, it's just a license to up the ante. So not long after the whole drama with Alice's family, it was 15-year-old Trina's turn to escape. With help from Alice, the two girls ran to Trina's aunt's house. Now, weirdly, Trina's uncle was the deputy sheriff, and yet this stuff still happens. That's really weird.
Right.
Now, the aunt that they'd ran away to, she was like, yeah, you girls can shelter here, but you can't leave the house until your uncle, the deputy sheriff, gets here, right? I'm going to keep you safe. You're not leaving the house. I'll protect you. And, you know, he's the deputy sheriff, the strong arm of the law, right? He's totally not just going to let Ken get away with whatever he wants. Sadly, Ken gets to the house first before the deputy sheriff. He stood outside the house with a shotgun in hand, shouting, quote, come on out here, you fucking bitches, or I'll come inside and blow your fucking brains out.
Right.
That'll get me out of the house.
Yeah.
He promised that nobody would get hurt if the girls just gave in and came back with him. Now, they know this is a lie, right? They know it's a fucking... They know him well enough now. But they do it anyway. I presume there was the idea that, you know, they just don't want to get anyone else hurt. They don't want anyone else to get involved. It's their business, their life. They've chose it. They're going to deal with it, which I think is genuinely a sad thing if that's the case.
Mm.
Now, back at the farm, Ken beat the girls relentlessly, even raping Trina at gunpoint. The next day, he put Trina in the truck, drove to her parents' house, and made her watch as he shot her dog and burned the parents' house down.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah.
I know there's a moral thing coming at the end where he's clearly going to get killed because that's how you started it. And you're like, was it right that people took law into their own hands and killed him? 100%. He killed a dog. Fuck him. Hope he burns in hell, cunt. He's lost me.
Yeah. Oh, well, no. I would say he was up with the sexual assault. Yeah, we are fair enough. Right?
To be fair. Yeah, okay. He lost me a lot. That, wow. Yeah, he lost me a long time ago, but that is... sexual assault. It's like that Community fucking meme, isn't it? The sexual assault I can handle. But I draw the line at killing a dog.
It's weird, isn't it, that we have this thing about dogs. Like, Hollywood doesn't like any film that a dog dies in, and most people will choose not to see a film if they know that a dog dies in it, so they never advertise.
If ever I'm watching a horror film and I see a dog in it, I turn the film off because I know what's going to happen.
It's weird that we do that. Watching it. Like, and this is a really interesting thing to look at, actually, and maybe you guys listening can answer this as well. Like, we obviously have this real fascination with true crime, which is why you listen to, you know, you always listen to our true crime episodes. You don't really care about the nice guy that built a road for everyone in town.
That is an episode that we did.
Yeah, like, but you're like, oh, what's that? He cut up and ate a French woman. Oh, yeah, I'll listen to that. Like, but... Like, we're okay with that. But the idea when I say, oh, he mutilated this dog, tore it apart, this, that, the other, we're like, oh, he's fucking awful. What a terrible human. Like, that. Why is that worse? And I wonder whether, and please do answer this, everyone.
That is strange that I have more conviction after him killing the dog.
Yeah. Is it because we look at the idea of, like, a dog is generally just seen to be, like, this angelic being. It knows no evil. It doesn't do anything wrong. It's just always there. It's happy all the time.
Innocence, isn't it?
It's the innocence of
it. But then
all.
So is a child.
Yeah.
But that's why people get so angry about paedophilia, is because that a child is innocent and you're taking that innocence away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it is.
It is funny that we do that.
What a knobhead.
Yeah, what a knobhead, yeah. The sexual assault. Now, the parents, weirdly, didn't call the police over their house being burnt down. They straight up just fled, leaving their 15-year-old daughter with Ken. Didn't even take her with them. They went, nah, I'm out.
You're probably worried that they're going to shoot him.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When Trina went to a doctor after her sexual assault, the doctor called social services, which, fair enough, I think that's quite good. He was like, no, yeah. this isn't good. I feel like he should have called the police, not social services, like she'd have a child taken away, I don't know. Now, Trina, but then she is a child, so that's probably why he did it. Now, Trina and her children were taken away, and charges of rape, arson, and flourishing a deadly weapon were placed against Ken. Trina, being the only witness to this, meant she was at great risk from Ken, but it didn't stop him. He would harass the safe house that she was being kept in for months, essentially pulling the same tactics deployed against Alice and her family. Now, Trina was staying strong at this point, despite one hiccup when a magistrate judge refused to try Ken. Now, you talked about being a coward, right? This is a magistrate judge. This is the guy that before the main trial hears stuff and goes, yeah, you got a case, love it, let's go. He said, quote, I don't want anything to do with that man or I'll get killed.
Wow, so you're not going to do your job. Yeah, well, you're going to be faced with murderers if you're a judge. That's literally your job.
Yeah, you didn't want nothing to do with it. Totally was like, that. Nah, I don't want to try it. Not doing it. Not interested. Boy can walk as far as I'm concerned. Now, luckily, another judge who had more balls than this guy took his place, and 8 counts of child molestation were added to the list. Ken
finally.
Ken would go down for serious time now, finally. So, for rape, arson, flourishing a deadly weapon, and child molestation, how long do you think he went down for?
Well, I'd like to say for life, but you're about to tell me it was like a year.
No, I'm not going to tell you a year.
It should be life.
It should, but it's not a year, luckily. Not luckily. Not a single day. He got off.
Oh, I thought you were about to tell me. You were building me up like he was going to go down for longer.
Yeah. No.
Oh.
He didn't do a single day. This guy got off, straight off.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah.
How?
How is the question, yes. So, while trial was being put together, Trina moved to Kansas to live with her grandparents to sort of keep her away from Ken, right? Because we know that he will intimidate the witness. We know he will. But for some, this is so stupid and I hate this so much. Trina, whilst living with her grandparents, just decides, oh, I'm just not really happy here. I don't like it here. I'm not enjoying it here. So what else does a 16-year-old who knows no different do? She called Ken and asked him to pick her up. Like, this story's infuriating.
For God's sakes. Yeah, it is. That is annoying. I can't even begin to imagine their sort of mental state.
How bad can it be?
From the outside, that is annoying.
How bad can it be living with your grandparents in Kansas who probably only just want to look after you? Like, you're actually running a case against your husband for rape and assault and child
I've never been to Kansas, but I imagine it's a bit more interesting than this asshole of a town that they're from, or city or wherever it is with 300 people.
Maybe. This is the thing, like I say, there's like less than 500 people living in this place. Like, every single person in this town knows who Ken is and they don't like him. They're all scared of him. Anyway, living with Ken once again, Ken had heard a rumour that your wife couldn't testify against you in a crime. Now, Strictly speaking, this isn't exactly true. It's not exactly how it works, but Ken doesn't know that. He assumes that it is this way, and it just by chance...
Well, but she's the one pressing charges.
Correct.
So in this instance, she can.
But if she obviously is the wife, as far as Ken's concerned, a wife cannot accuse, a wife cannot testify against their spouse, is how Ken believes true.
He's an idiot.
He is an idiot because it's not exactly how it works, but it does work out in his favour because he tries to play that card. It's exactly what fucking happens, right? Remember Sharon, the 15-year-old who he shot the chin off?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she ran away, remember? She got out, proper just left, got out. He actually managed to get back in contact with her, and he got her to give him a divorce really quickly. It was like, look, I'm fine. Like, just I don't care that you've gone. Just give me a divorce. That's what I want. So she goes, yeah, fine, done.
I bet
so
she'd love
like,
that.
Oh, yeah, she probably did. Within a day or two, I'm like, it's done. But now a free man, right, he asked Trina to marry him, to which she said yes. Remember, Trina's the one with all the charges against him right now. Yeah. She's 15. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have to sometimes remember that she's a child. She said yes. But since she's still underage, he needs parental consent. But remember, he burnt down their house and they ran away.
Yeah.
So you have to admire the sheer audacity of this guy. Ken paid the mum a little visit, and with some gentle persuasion, she consented to allowing her daughter to marry Ken.
Gentle persuasion.
Yeah. Now, Trina is officially Miss McElroy III and decided to stand by her man. She dropped all charges against him.
Did she think that being married would change things?
I don't know. I don't know. And do you know what's mad as well? So we'll find out after Ken's death, she does quite a lot of interviews where she's basically sticking up for him. You know, she's got lots of kids with him now. You know, she's lived with him. He is basically all she knows. So I suppose it's probably one of those things. Now, I could go through the list of crimes that Ken gets away with, right? Like point blank shooting a man in the stomach, almost killing him. But we'd be here forever. So we're going to move on. We know that Ken is a straight up prick and everyone in the town is scared of him. But there was one family who weren't. Enter stage left, the Bowenkamps. Lois and her husband, Beau Bowenkamp. Now, these guys are relatively new to Skidmore and they owned a shop. They used to live in Skidmore, they moved away for a long time and then they came back. So by this point, they don't actually know who the McElroys are and what reputation they've got. Now, one day, a couple of Ken's brood came by the shop to buy some candy and cigarettes. One was a teenager, the other was a 4-year-old. The teenager paid for her bits and then they went to leave. But Lois, the shop owner, noticed that the 4-year-old had a couple of sweets in her hand and then had no intention of paying for it. So she reprimanded the kids and said, no, listen, honey, like, you know, the little one's picking up some sweets. You're not going to pay for it. Do you mind just dropping it? And the kid, the 14-year-old, went, oh, yeah, stop fucking taking the sweets and tried to take the sweets out of the 4-year-old's hand. That then made the 4-year-old cry, had a full-on tantrum as they left, which then made Tammy McElroy, who is Ken's eldest daughter, who had drove them to the town, come running into the store, demanding, why the fuck is my little sister crying in the shop? What have you done to her? So at this point, Lois, right, she starts explaining the situation, going, oh, no, you've misunderstood the situation. Listen, your girls came in, she bought the stuff, but the little one was trying to walk out with this, that, the other. Even the 14-year-old was saying to her sister Tammy, like, oh, yeah, no, this is exactly what happened. But Tammy was like, nah. She full on flew off the rails, telling Lois that, you know, we'll never shop in this store again. You've lost our business forever, all this kind of stuff, which if you're trying to steal from the shop, I don't need your business. It's fine. I'll do all right without you. The amount of times I heard that when I used to work at the go-kart track and people were like, didn't like the race or something. And I'm like, okay, listen, I can give you your money back in credit form. That's fine. And they're like, no, I'm not happy with this. I want full refund. And you'd be like, that's not what we offer. You'll never get my business again. You're like, mate, we're the biggest go-kart track.
It's not the threat that people think it is.
Yeah, we're the biggest go-kart track in the country. I'm not going to miss your 50 quid. Like, it's fine. Just walk away, mate. Anyway, at this point, right, around half an hour later it is, Ken Ken rocks up to the store. Now, this is when you know, oh, shit. Now, Ken is now in his 40s. He's putting on a bit of timber. He's not quite the handsome man he used to be. He's starting to show his age, right? Now, with a knife in his hand, he talks to Lois. Her husband, Beau, who is a little bit older than her, he's like 20 years older than her, he stands by her side and he calmly asks Ken to put the knife away. You don't need it. Let's just have a conversation. Ken refuses. You can't tell me what to do. I'm a free man. It's a free country. What's bollocks? Trina, obviously the 15-year-old wife, Trina is screaming at Lois, asking for an explanation as to why her baby daughter is upset. Lois is trying to explain the situation, to which Trina understands everything at this point. She goes, oh, right, I get it now. I get it. The kids are playing up. I get it. Sorry, right. This is all blown over. It can be settled. But Ken decides to tell us, shut up. We're not doing that. We're going to play it my way, and I don't give a shit what's happened. He asks for a pack of cigarettes, and it's intimidating the way he does it. You know, and Lois, seriously, man, Lois, completely unaware of the man that she's dealing with, stands up tall, says with chest, quote, sir, I understand that nobody in your family wishes to do business in this store anymore. Could you please leave? Now, I admire the courage. Honestly, I do. But seriously, is your life worth a pack of cigarettes? Like, even if he doesn't...
No, absolutely not.
Even if he's got no intention of paying for these, just give them to him. Like,
no.
I have been stupid enough to stand up to dodgy customers at work, and I'm telling you now, it ain't worth it.
No.
In fact, I got lucky, right? So there was a lad that came to race at our place. He was late for his booking or something, like severely late. We were closing down for the night and he wanted his money back. It's not the company policy. I wasn't doing it. He and his like lad's mates, who are like all quite tall, very, very intimidating, just like circle me. And that they're trying to, I'm trying to just talk to the lead booker, ignoring the fact that all these boys are very, very close surrounding me. And I was quite lucky that the team that I work with, the guys that I was managing were like, they were all out there ready to just jump in if anything happened. And I'm telling you now, it was intimidating, really, really scary. And I remember ringing up like the regional manager, explaining what had happened. And he went, why don't you just give them the money? And I went, because the company policy is not to do it. And he went, I don't give a shit. He went, I care more about your safety than anything else. Like, we can lose the money. It's fine. But sadly, one of my mates from work, my old work, he didn't get that. He full on, I watched it. I had to call the police because he got slapped around the face by a customer. Like, just fully.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, leaned over the reception desk.
People are so entitled.
Yeah. Really wild.
Like, so entitled. Because at that point, for the customer, I don't think it's about money. It just becomes about pride, and they have to win. Otherwise, they're going to feel like they've completely lost.
Yeah, it's scary.
And then it just escalates. Just don't be a knobhead. It's just so easy just to not be a knobhead.
Yeah. So my advice, listen, if you work in a store or any sort of customer-facing environment, if the customer wants something, just fucking do it. Because at the end of the day, everything's insured. You're not going to lose out, and you still get paid at the end of the day. It's fine. It's not your money. Yeah. Now, it really was a dumb thing to do, to stand up to Ken. Ken didn't take this disrespect lightly. He would terrorize the Bowen camps hereafter. He would have Trina and his children drive in multiple cars like a convoy slowly past the Bowen camps' house at night with rifles out on display to try and intimidate them. When Lois called the deputy sheriff, who remember is Trina's uncle, said to them, quote, oh, he won't do anything. Oh, he may harass you a little bit, but he ain't going to do anything serious.
But he has done
He held up the entire tavern and threatened to shoot a man in the face.
Yeah.
Now, during the day, he would sit in his truck outside their store just staring at them. And at night, he would do the same thing outside their house. And one night, when he saw
nothing better to do.
Exactly. But then seeing he ain't got a job, he ain't got fuck all else to do. Now, one night when he saw them looking back at Ken, he got out of his truck and fired two rounds from his shotgun into the sky. And at one point, he actually fired shots at the house when they were asleep and they were shit scared. Like, that was it. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, as you would.
But the thing is, eventually they just gave up calling the police because they kept saying, oh, listen, Ken will get bored of it. He'll just stop doing it soon. That was literally their attitude. So Lois instead just decided to buy a shotgun of her own. Like, this is how shit escalates. This is how it's bad. Because then gun, like,
yeah.
Two wrongs don't make a right. Eye for an eye, all that shit. Like, she then buys a gun and is then more inclined to use it against him. And then guess what? She would then get done for it. So, you know, silly. Now, Ken was stupid enough to brag about his harassment. In a bar one night, he said out loud, quote, "That old man needs a lesson taught to him. I know he's an old man, but he still needs a lesson taught to him." Excellent English. Now, on July 8th, Bo's 70th birthday, he was sitting out on the delivery deck outside his shop, cutting up cardboard boxes with a knife when Ken approached him. McElroy asked Bo if he'd called the police on him yet. Bo replied no. Ken asks if Bo's angry with him for everything he's been doing. Bo replies no. And then says, "Now this is private property. Listen, just get out. I don't want no trouble. Just go." Like, he's not trying to get involved at all. He's trying to just not escalate. So Ken does the whole, "Oh, you can't tell me what to do, blah, blah, blah." Ken then goes up to these four lads that are just hanging out on the street in view of the shop, and he gives them some money, and then off they went. So now there's no one watching. There's no one seeing anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Ken and Bo. Bo had gone back to cutting up his boxes when he heard some shuffling from behind him. When he turned round, he was face on with the end of Ken's shotgun. He ducked just as the shotgun went off. Ken was about to actually blow the guy's head off.
Yeah.
When the boys came back, Ken was gone, but Bo was on the floor. He'd been shot in the neck. Everyone knew that Ken had shot and tried to kill Bo Bowenkamp. There was no denying that. We all know what's gone on. So Ken was arrested. Trina was his alibi, claiming that he was with her the whole time. Ken had actually disposed of the weapon and demanded to see his lawyer. So he was released because of this. He's got an alibi. He don't got the weapon that they're saying done it. He's straight up just released. So the conditions actually. So Ken's arrested. He's got an alibi. There's no weapon at the moment, but he's still released. Right. He's released on a $30,000 bail, which he pays. Mm-hmm. But the other conditions for his bail are if he promises to keep the peace and behave.
What is the law in this town? It's like the Wild West.
It is Wild West stuff, man. It's proper Wild West stuff. Now, the guy just shot an old man in the neck, trying to kill him. And they're like, "Hey, listen, Ken, we'll let you go. Just promise to behave, yeah?" He's like, "All right." Like, this guy cannot believe his luck. So this fella's just out and about, right? He's clearly got a vendetta against the Bowenkamps for some reason. You'd think that the people of Skidmore would be keeping their eye on him a bit more, but they're not, really. They've got this attitude that if you leave Ken alone, he will leave you alone. Ken would terrorise the Bowenkamps for the next year while waiting trial, calling their house, hanging outside. You'd think that that would breach his bail, but nobody seems to really give a shit. Or it seems that everyone is so scared of him, they ain't willing to get involved, lest he cast his eye on them too. So, when his court day came around, it had to be held in a town hours away, since the trial in Skidmore was not an option. Ken admitted that he shot Bo, but in self-defence, claiming that Bo had threatened him with a knife. Ken fired a shot as a warning, and it accidentally hit him. Now, the jury thought that this was a simple argument gone wrong, and then found Ken guilty of second-degree assault. This is how Wild Westy it kind of is. And bear in mind, this is like...
It literally sounds like Wild West.
Yeah, this is...
Like, I've just, as you've been reading that, I've been like looking at pictures of him because I was interested. Yeah. It's in the 80s. It's the fucking 80s.
This is 1981 that this happened. The jury, who don't know who he is, they had to move the trial 2 hours away so that no one knows who he is, because any trial in Skidmore would just not work. And they still went, listen, it's just an argument. That was just an argument. They still...
What's wrong with this town?
Weird, isn't it? Now, for second degree assault, right, Ken is sentenced to 2 years in jail. But he's allowed 25 days to file a motion for a new trial and was allowed to be a free man until that time was up before he had to then send himself into prison, which is really weird. That's a bizarre thing. Mm. You don't just go straight down. You've got 25 days to just make your stuff, do what you've got to do, put an appeal in, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So at this point, the most hated man in town was free to continue terrorizing the Bowen camps, and people were just fed up with the legal system. It clearly isn't working. There were rumors going around that some people were claiming if they was to see Ken in a quiet road, they'd make it look like there was some sort of accident happened. There were rumors of people saying this, but no one out loud said it at the time. People were becoming more open about their hatred of Ken. They seem to lose their fear now because they're so scared they are getting brave and just going, no, we've just got to do something. Now, on the morning of July 10th, 1981, around 60 residents of Skidmore, including the mayor and the now retired town marshal, are in that local tavern having a meeting about what to do with Ken.
About fucking time.
Yeah. Among other ideas, straight up killing Ken was thrown on the table quite a lot by some people. Now, one of the residents insisted that they stick to the law. And when asking the local sheriff for advice on what they could do, he said along the lines of, well, listen, if Ken shoots first, you're all within your rights to shoot back.
Yeah.
Which is
but then great. Who's going to be the one to like sort of taunt him to the point of him shooting at you?
Yeah. Now, listen, I don't know if we could call that an endorsement by the police or not, but, you know, I think it's quite funny where he's gone, hey, listen, I'm not telling you to do anything, but if he does shoot, you can shoot back. That's it. Man, I don't know.
Just reminding them of the law in a very, like, suggestive way.
Yeah. Now, at this point, Ken's truck rolls into town. Everyone is on edge. You could, like, cut the tension with a knife. It's just not good. People are staring at him as Ken walks into the bar, takes a seat, orders a drink at the tavern. Now, he knew what they were talking about. He'd heard rumours that people were going to have a meeting to talk about him. And so he was just blatantly just trying to bait everyone and fucking tempt them. And he wanted everyone to know that he did not care what they were talking about or thought. Like, he's like, I don't give a shit. You can try to kill me with your life. I actually don't care. He's trying to show strength. Now, after he finishes his pint, he bought a pack of cigarettes and left with Trina by his side. When they got into the truck, they noticed the 60 or so residents circling the truck, very Hot Fuzz-like.
Yeah.
Now, Ken at this point just made a point of just staring out all of those staring at him. He was just like anyone he could look at. He's just staring at him, being like, do it. I dare you. I fucking dare someone to do something. And at this point, the glass from the rear window shatters and a bullet hits him. More shots are fired from multiple directions. When the shooting stops, everyone gets in their trucks and drives off. Trina was dragged out of the truck by a resident and held in the bank whilst they called the police. In fact, one woman came up on the shaking 15-year-old Trina and said, quote, you left us no choice. I quite like that.
Yeah.
Now, the murder of Ken Rex McElroy was no shock to anyone living in Skidmore, with some even claiming to feel a sense of relief when they found out. I quite like that, that conversation.
I bet, the Bowen camps were fucking so happy.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. You can imagine. They were like, wait, he's what? He's dead. Oh, my God. Thank fuck for that. Now, weirdly, this should just be an easy open and shut case, right? This should be so easy to solve. There are at least 60 witnesses to the shooting of Ken that day. And yet, when the police go around asking for witnesses to give a statement, not a single person came forward with information. Nobody saw a thing.
That's so... I love that everyone's got each other's back.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, evidence tells us that at least 10 rifle shots entered the truck, with Ken being hit twice, once in the head, which killed him instantly. Now, we know that the rounds belonged to Winchester rifles, and based on those rounds, we can now determine that there were at least 3 shooters, with one of them using a shotgun, which is overkill. So, we can kind of narrow it down a bit more out of those 60 who might have been the people that did it. Now, Trina has made claims on who shot Ken. She was in the truck. She should have seen something. Yeah. She's made claims, but nothing has ever stuck. And I think it's mainly because of this whole she was an abused wife and maybe she's not telling the truth. And at the beginning, she was vehemently on Ken's side despite everything. And I don't know if later in life she changed her opinion and mind on it, but she's skewed as a witness. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, she'll still be alive today, surely.
She might be. I didn't find out. She might
be. She was 15 in the 80s. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Chances are she probably is.
She probably is. She may have lived out a completely normal life afterwards. But yeah, the town is under the impression that they were better off without him. And whoever did it just shouldn't be punished for putting down this menace. In fact, there's a really good documentary. You can find it on YouTube. It's a really good documentary where they talk to the residents of the town and they're all just like, nah, didn't see it. Mm. Nah, don't know. Nah, I don't want to talk about it. Not interested. And they hate people coming over to talk about it as well. They don't like people coming around to talk about it. In fact, like I say, there are people that are still living who know who shot and refuse to say anything.
Yeah, for sure.
In fact, there was one guy on the documentary. He's like, yeah, I know who shot Ken. Yeah, I know. I won't say nothing. I know. Naturally, everyone probably would say that. You know, it gets you on the TV now. But yeah. Now, I guess we may never know exactly who shot Ken Rex McElroy. It's going to be the eternal mystery, I suppose. There will be whispers. There will be things later in life where people say, oh, my granddaddy told me before he died it was this guy. You know, we'll never really get down to it, I think. But my question really is not, did he deserve to die? I think we've kind of answered that question already. It's undeniable. The guy's a piece of shit. He deserves to die for everything he did. But my question really is vigilante justice ever justified?
It's a really difficult one.
Yeah, if the justice system worked correctly, Ken would have been in prison for a long time and, you know, he'd likely never have died in that way. He probably wouldn't have been murdered. He probably would have died in prison if he'd stayed in that long. So was this vigilante justice justified?
This one, I think, yeah. But it's really difficult because then if you say, like, vigilante justice is justified as a whole, that gives people an inch and then they'll take a fucking mile because then some of it is not justified. In this case, absolutely. And I find it hilarious that no one saw a thing despite there being 60 people.
Do you know what's funny as well? The FBI got involved and it still hasn't been solved.
Well, what are you going to do with no witnesses?
Yeah, that's
And if 60 people are telling you that, like, oh, no, we don't know, then you've got no case.
No, you really don't. You just don't have a case. I don't know. I think what's really interesting, and the documentary I watched really sort of plays this, and I'm not sure how relevant it is, but Skidmore actually has a history of vigilante justice. It's got quite a long history of it. It's a town that was like it's like 100 years old or something, so it's not necessarily that old as a town. But in like the 1920s, there was a young schoolboy who was accused of assaulting a teacher or something, a female teacher, a young African-American guy. And so they just assumed, well, he must be guilty. He's black. And so he was tied, beaten bloody, I think, and then tied to the roof of the schoolhouse. And then they set the schoolhouse on fire.
Fucking hell.
Like this is the grandparents of the people who shot Ken McElroy. Like, these are their grandparents that did that.
Yeah.
So there was oh, is there a link? Is there, like, you know, they've got a history of this stuff, vigilante justice. But, you know, for the most part...
I mean, that one is not justified.
No, not at all. But, it's interesting that, you know, that they will fall back on vigilante justice if they have to, which is, like, something
I would never think
of. Well,
it's also been evident... Throughout this story, it's been evident that the justice system in this town is fucking shit. So maybe they just have to rely on being vigilantes because the law's not going to do anything.
Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it? It's really bizarre. What an interesting story. Listen, for my money, I'm not sure vigilante justice is probably ever justified. I feel like there's got to be another way. You've just got to go higher up somewhere. I don't know. But yeah, the guys in
They tried several times in this one. You can't fault them for not trying. Like, they tried to get the law involved so many times and they just straight up fucking bottled it every time.
Yeah. I don't know. I suppose, listen, I hear that the town is better off without him. I get that. They are totally better off without him. Yeah. It's interesting nonetheless. I find it fascinating. But yeah, that's the story of the murder of Ken Rex McElroy, which is weird because we don't normally look at it from that angle. We normally look at, you know, Ken would be the murderer or something like that, whereas actually in this case, the victim is the arsehole.
Yeah, which is good. It's a really interesting story.
Yeah.
I'm going to go watch that documentary. It's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, no, go check it out. For everyone else, listen, if you have an opinion on this at all, if you know the story, if you know anything, listen, we've got quite a lot of American listeners. So if you know somebody who knows someone, you know, like everyone in the UK knows the Craigs, let us know like what your thoughts are on it at all. I'm genuinely curious to hear what your thoughts are. If it was justified, if there was a better way, could something else have happened? I don't know. But yeah, let us know and hit us up with some comments. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed that because honestly, it was such a fascinating story that I was like, I've just got to tell this. Now, whilst we wrap up, I just want to say like a real quick like thank you to some people that have messaged us recently. It's honestly so good to hear from you guys who've left us comments, left us messages. Oh, big shout out to Andre however we pronounce your name, because Andre messaged us from Australia really recently. Who recently discovered the show. So hi, Andre, how you doing? But the one thing that really made his comment stick out was he was saying about how, you know, one, loves the show, great to hear it. But the way that the guy holds a faith and said that obviously the way that we talk about faith being very, I suppose anti is the word, but the way we talk about faith can be quite jarring. But at the same time, you can kind of understand that we can have a genuine, serious conversation and can be respectful in some ways. So I really like that, you know, we clearly toe that line where, you know, and we've always been about this, James, where it's like, listen, you can have your faith. It's absolutely fine. It's just one of those, you know, we don't like it if you bother other people. And I'm always of this, you know, evidently we know what I think about stuff like that. But I'm more than happy for us to sit and have a genuine, honest conversation as long as we're all on the same playing field with the same sort of, you know, understanding of what where we're at and all this kind of stuff. So I just really like that we come across well in that way and people do understand, and I just think it's quite nice to I think we sort of briefly mentioned it and or hinted at it at the beginning where it's like if you're new to us you might not understand where we're coming from or what we are, but if you've been following us for a long time you understand us a bit more. You understand that, you know, if we say something in a particular way we may not mean it the way maybe out of context comes across. Yeah, I'm rambling now.
I think we're very loud and honest with our opinions, which I think some people wouldn't take to, which is it's fine. Like, but I do think we would be open to conversations about. I'm always fascinated to learn about people that have like different faiths, different ways of life. To me, I love the conversations, and I love like getting into debates. Maybe it's I don't know. My parents got fucking sick of me because when was it? Years ago, back when there was like a general election. Or just anything to do with politics. Me and my parents don't align politically, really.
Yeah.
We're always just like arguing about it. But I would start the debate. Christmas dinner for me, I will bring up things that I know that will rile my family up just to get a reaction, just to fucking debate with them. Because I live for it. But it doesn't mean I don't respect opinions. It just means I want a conversation about something that's not fucking surface level. I couldn't give a shit about, like, small talk fucking bothers me. I'd much rather sit in silence than be like, hey, how you doing? How's it like? I can't stand it. If you come up to me and be like, I'm Catholic and I think Mother Teresa's great, then I'm going to be like, right, here's my reasons why I think she's not. And then we're just going to have a fucking debate about it. That those are the kind of interactions I like. But I don't want anyone to ever feel like belittled for their opinion, because that's silly. That's not what we're about at all. If you're religious, then fucking power to you.
Yeah, no, I couldn't, you know, to really emphasize that point that I never ever want any of us and our listeners to feel belittled. Honestly, feel please if it's something like, you know, maybe we put it in a particular way and you feel like you're like, no, do you know what? I think I could probably educate the boys here or whatever. Honestly, like, drop us a message, like, say hello.
Yeah, do it. Just
do it. Like, we're totally open to all.
And there are things that we have edited out in the past that we've recorded, gone away for an hour, sat with what we've said and been like, that was too much, and then got rid of it.
Yeah. There's some uncut bits. But yeah, no, we're always trying to be careful about what we say and how we say it. So no, I do appreciate that it comes across in the right way. So yeah, hi, Andre, and thank you. Thank you for your comment. Please do get in contact with us. I absolutely love hearing comments from you guys. We can sometimes be a bit slow to get back to you with obviously work and stuff. But no, always pop in and say hello.
I've also, right, I've done something that I haven't told you about this. I've deleted that fucking automatic reply because it did my head in. So you won't get, hey, we're really good at, oh, I've got rid of it. I'm sick of it. So if you don't hear from us, it's because we've got rid of that.
Yeah, all right, fair
every,
enough.
You'd have a conversation with someone and every time they'd message, it would just come in. It was doing my head in.
Yeah, I suppose it so could have been gone. Better. No, fair enough. But yeah, thank you very much, everyone, for hopping off and joining us. And yeah, just being around. I know that obviously we're a bit inconsistent every now and then. Obviously, the fact that whenever episodes go out, you always listen. So thank you very much for joining us and supporting us as always. And thank you very much. And yeah, we will see you on the next one.
Go to TikTok. Got to plug it once more.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.